Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. In this hour, we talk about the transgender moment. You probably will have an immediate kind of sympathy with that phrase, the transgender moment. It does feel like we're going through a kind of cultural moment here. And our guest will be Ryan T. Anderson, who has written a book called When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. If you have questions or comments that you would like to share with us, 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. In addition to the brand new When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment, Ryan Anderson is also has some very notable books to his name, including What is Marriage? Man and Woman, A Defense, and Debating Religious Liberty and Discrimination. You see him all over the place on ABC, CNN, CNBC, all those fancy places. And he's been kind enough to join us here. Ryan T. Anderson, thanks for being with us.
Sure thing. Happy to be with you.
I should also mention that you are a scholar at the Heritage Foundation. You're the the William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. How long have you been there?
I've been at Heritage for 6 years now.
So you're a scholar. You get to pick your topics. I'm sure nobody comes to you and says, "Hey, you got to write a book about this." What grabbed you about the transgender moment? Why did you want to write about that?
Sure. So I had been writing about marriage and the debate over the definition of marriage, what marriage is, and then that quickly progressed into a discussion about religious liberty, not just religious liberty in kind of the healthcare context of abortion and then contraception and the HHS mandate, Hobby Lobby, Little Sisters, but then increasingly it was becoming, what about the religious liberty of the baker, the florist, the photographer, Catholic adoption agencies? We see a big battle right now in Philadelphia, Catholic adoption agencies, Catholic schools. And so the marriage debate turned into a religious liberty debate. And then there was a new debate, which was over gender identity. And it seems that, you know, as quickly as LGBT activists won at the Supreme Court in redefining marriage, they pivoted from the LGB part of the acronym to the T part of the acronym, and they started redefining the word sex to mean gender identity. Yes. And so it was 2 years ago this month that the Obama administration sent out a what's known as a Dear Colleague letter, and it went to all of the nation's schools saying you're now going to have to do your bathrooms and locker rooms and sports teams and dorm rooms and hotel rooms for field trips. You have to do all of those things based on gender identity, not based on biological sex. And that was when we first kind of started getting inquiries from the press, from policymakers, from legislators. What should we think about this? What should we do about this? And then as I started digging deeper into these questions about gender identity, I came across a number of people who had transitioned and then detransitioned. Mm. And they told their stories thinking that transitioning would be the solutions to their problems, and then discovering, you know, 5 or 10 or 15 years later that it didn't provide the wholeness or the happiness that they were looking for, that it brought additional complications. And then they give their testimony on what it was like detransitioning, going back to identifying with their bodily sex as God created them, and just, you know, the struggles they went through. And that's when I really realized this isn't just about bathrooms. This isn't just about public policy or law. This is about human people, people made in the image and likeness of God, and the human costs of getting human nature wrong.
Wow, what a phrase, the human cost of getting human nature wrong. That's an extraordinary thought. I wonder if, I wonder if you see this, among young people, people in their teens, people coming into young adulthood, as an old person looking at it, you say it looks an awful lot like an emotionally agitated moment in which and people always make fun of this when you say this, but in which in a certain way they're being encouraged to try on these other identities. And so it's not just a matter of I was born this way and whatever we may say about that. It's much more of a kind of, oh, there's this thought that this is such a positive movement. I should try to be part of it. And I do think kids are trying on these different identities. How far it will go, one doesn't know. But a lot of people are going to end up with hurts and broken hearts and devastation in their lives because of this moment and the kind of emotional kind of, I don't know, fervor of the whole thing. Am I off base on that?
No, I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to what you just said. Going through the developmental process, navigating puberty, growing into adulthood, is a difficult process for anyone, even in the best of circumstances. And we now have a culture where this is that much more difficult. In the aftermath of the sexual revolution, in the aftermath of the divorce revolution, with the rise of identity politics, it's that much harder to navigate that path.
Right.
And people who are struggling are looking for solutions. And so what they're being told by celebrities, by medical professionals, by the gender experts, by their school counselors, is that the solution to their problem may very well be that they were assigned the wrong sex at birth. And so if they were to transition, that would provide them with the happiness that they're looking for. It's also really obvious that many of the people who now claim to be in favor of transgender rights haven't thought about this at all. All they know is that they were in favor of gay rights, they were in favor of gay marriage, and the next kind of identity politics issue within the LGBT constellation was transgender rights. And so that means they're in favor of it. But they haven't even thought that critically about what it means to have a high school girl who thinks she's a boy to give that girl testosterone.
Yes.
Or to perform a double mastectomy on that girl at age 18. And I think many people, if they actually were trapped in this transgender moment, but if they could get out of it, if they could stop and just think about it more critically, they would see that it doesn't make sense to tell a three-year-old girl that she's actually a boy and to give her a new name and a new pronoun and a new wardrobe. They would see that this is going much further than anything in the gay rights movement or the effort to redefine marriage ever went, because we're changing people's bodies based upon misguided thoughts and misguided feelings.
Yeah, and so you almost want to advise all of these young people to take your time almost because before you do something, because you need time for your psyche to mature and for you to have some perspective on life and see, oh, just because the whole world was whipped out up about this for a moment, that doesn't mean that that's my destiny or who I am. But let me ask you this. Are there people who actually, I mean, I it's not really a question. That's not the proper question. I mean, it seems obvious that there are some people who do have images, body images that are not connected to the reality of what their body is, whether those are people who have anorexia or bulimia, or whether those are people who believe they should have been a one-legged person and not a two-legged person. And I know some people will think I'm joking, but those are medical conditions that people have. So there are some people who actually have this nagging, almost obsessive sense of, I was born in the wrong body.
That's exactly right. The condition that you mentioned, you mentioned anorexia, bulimia. The next one is bodily integrity identity disorder. The acronym is BID, B-I-I-D. People who think they're disabled when they're actually able-bodied, they want to have surgeries to amputate limbs to identify them, their bodies with their identities. And on none of these conditions do people think that the appropriate therapy is directed at the body. No one says to the high school girl who has anorexia that the solution is liposuction.
Right.
They don't direct therapy at the body. What they direct the therapy are at the thoughts and at their feelings. How can we help you to feel comfortable in your own body? How can we help you to align your thoughts and your feelings with the reality of your body rather than trying to do what's impossible, you know, changing the reality of your body to line it up with your misguided thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
And so we don't do that when it comes to anorexia. We don't do that for people who have bodily integrity identity disorder. We don't do that for people who think they're animals. I mean, you can go online and see people who have had surgeries to try to transform into a dragon and into a lizard and various other animals. But no one thinks that's a good use of medicine. Why is it in this case that we think for someone who frequently it's relying on bad sex stereotypes, right? They don't fit into the sex stereotype that's most prominent for their age group, that we don't say, oh, that means you're the opposite sex. What we help them do is develop a more robust understanding of sex and gender.
May I propose,
just because you're a boy who likes dolls doesn't mean you're a girl.
Right.
Something like that.
But here's I wonder what you would make of this. It seems to me that we have made a decision at some point after the 1960s that the most important thing about human life and the most important thing about any particular human life is sex. And having decided that, everything that connects to sex or sexuality, we treat in a different way. And so that's why the body dysmorphias of other types, we treat those as psychiatric or neurological or psychological problems. But if they have to do with sex, no, we have decided, no. Sex is that's what human life is, essentially, is sex. That's basically the message of the sexual revolution. And so we have to remove that into a different category, and you're a bigot if you say otherwise.
And that's why you see there are very few people who went along with Rachel Dolezal, the white lady who was identifying as black and who was running a local NAACP chapter.
Right.
You know, we have identity politics in the United States, but there are limits to that. You can't just identify as African-American.
Right.
You can't just identify with whatever you want to be, except when it comes, as you mentioned, to issues of sexuality.
So now
they want to say that gender is a spectrum, that sex is merely assigned at birth, that it's fluid, that it exists along the spectrum. And it's really rejecting some of the truths about human nature.
Yeah, like that we are a sexually dimorphic species. Like that's just basic science. And I wonder, I do think there are some scientists and biologists in particular who are actually good on this point about saying, no, that this isn't science. This is something, this is some kind of mysticism pretending to be science. This is not science.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so one of the things that I do in the book is I'm trained in philosophy. My PhD is in philosophy. But what I do is I assemble many of the biologists and physicians, medical doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, other kind of experts in the science fields and medical fields, and what they have said on this, because there are some brave people out there who are working on the science, who are working on the medicine, who are willing to speak the truth. And I've tried to kind of collect some of those statements, make sense of them for the ordinary reader who doesn't have a PhD or an MD. The book's really written for lay people to understand what the best of philosophy and of psychiatry and of biology, what the best of all these disciplines tell us about the human person and human nature when it comes to our sexed identity and when it comes to people who have trouble identifying with their sex body. Gender dysphoria, people who struggle with gender dysphoria.
Ryan T. Anderson is our guest. The book, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. That is indeed an excellent title for the moment we are living through. We are living through the transgender moment. It came on us very suddenly is proceeding apace with consequences that I think very few in our media are willing to confront, certainly publicly, for fear of being called bigots or worse. We'll get to your calls for Dr. Anderson and more conversation on When Harry Became Sally right after this on Catholic Answers Live. Hi, this is Cy Kellett. It's easier than you may think to have a Catholic Answers speaker at your conference or parish event. We've got the speakers fired up, and knowledgeable Catholic Answers speakers have their bags packed and are ready to come see you. Go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com to find out just how easy it is to have a Catholic Answers speaker at your next event. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. Carlo, get your feet off my suitcase.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Tim Staples here. Since May is the month of Mary and Mother's Day, I'm offering a great opportunity for you to help yourself, your family, and your friends to get to know our Blessed Mother more deeply than ever before. And to help make that happen, we're offering my book, Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines for only $9.95. Folks, that's over 45% off the regular price. From her Immaculate Conception to the Annunciation, from her title as Mother of God to her perpetual virginity, from her assumption into heaven to her role as co-redemptrix, I'll give you all the facts and back them up with solid biblical evidence in a way that's easy to read, remember, and understand. Make this May the month you, your friends, and your family grow closer to the Mother of the Church, our Mother Mary. To get your copies of Behold Your Mother, call 1-888-291-8000 or log on to the shop at Catholic.com.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This hour we talk with Ryan T. Anderson, the author of the very necessary, I mean, we have lots of wonderful books, but this is a necessary book, in addition to being a very good book, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Dr. Anderson is a scholar at the Heritage Institute. And Dr. Anderson, we have a bunch of high school students with us from St. Joseph Academy today in the studio. And Natalia would like to ask you a question. Natalia?
Please do.
Okay. Hi. My question is, for the origins of those who are transgender and those who are gay, is it more psychological or is it more environmental?
Great question. So this is something that more or less everyone will agree to, whether they're left or right, secular or religious, is that they don't know what causes someone to identify as transgender. There are lots of theories that are floating out there, and no one really knows what will originate someone's feeling as if they're born in the opposite body, as if they're trapped in the opposite body. And it seems to be that there are a variety of factors that could influence this and that it'll be different in each situation. So it looks different when it happens in children versus adults. There are different theories of why, like, a middle-aged man would identify as a woman versus why a five-year-old boy might identify as a girl. It seems possible that it's even different for men and for women. So there are different reasons why a middle-aged woman versus a middle-aged man, or a five-year-old boy versus a five-year-old girl. And partly there can be biological predispositions. And so one example of this is that young boys who have low activity levels, so they're not the, you know, real kind of like rambunctious boys, they tend to get picked on by the rambunctious boys. And the rambunctious boys will, you know, call the quieter, more kind of subdued boys, you're a wuss, you're a sissy, et cetera, et cetera. And that can actually be one of the causes for a child developing gender dysphoria. So it starts with a biological predisposition, not that they were trapped in the wrong body, born in the wrong body, but that because they won't fit into a certain stereotype about boys their age, that might get them picked on. They might then cope with that bullying by telling themselves that they're actually a girl trapped in a boy's body. Their gender counselor at school might tell them they're actually a girl trapped in a boy's body. And then from there, you can see how one day they might decide to formally transition with either hormones or surgery. What doctors have historically been doing in that situation is engaging with what's known as talk therapy, talking to that boy about why he's a boy. Boys don't have to be rambunctious. Boys don't have to be bullies. Boys don't have to be fitting into whatever limited stereotype boys of his age are expected to be. That boys can be gentle, boys can be sweet, boys can be quiet, boys can be calm. And that once you help the child develop a more mature understanding of human sexuality and of gender roles and of all the rest, they can actually feel more comfortable in their own body. And so that's just one example. We could go through, and in the book I do go through a number of case studies that actually from the clinical literature of children who were brought to see a therapist with gender dysphoria and how the therapists were able to help them feel comfortable in their bodies again by identifying what the underlying cause might have been.
Natalia, what do you make of it? Is that an acceptable answer? You'll accept that?
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in and asking it. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Doctor, one thing I have to say, I have a kind of visceral, almost yuck reflex to, and I want to admit to that before I ask you about it, because I think it keeps us from talking about something that absolutely needs to be talked about, and that is what's being done to children around the country, maybe even around the world, in many of these clinics or in doctors' offices, and in many cases treating nothing wrong with the child with medical interventions that are in many ways permanent.
Yeah, this is it's hard to talk about, but it's necessary to talk about, because the reality here is that it was 11 years ago that the first pediatric gender clinic opened in the United States. And today there are over 45 pediatric gender clinics in the United States. And if you were a parent of a child and you brought your son or your daughter there because they didn't feel comfortable in their own body, this is the type of advice you would hear. This is the formal standard of care that the gender experts promote. Now, the first is that a child as young as 3 years old, if they are persistent, inconsistent, and insistent that they're the opposite sex, they should be given a new name and a new pronoun and a new wardrobe and given access to new bathrooms and locker rooms, all in an attempt to treat them as if they're the opposite sex. So this is known as socially transitioning. You should socially transition your child at as young as age 3 if they believe persistently, consistently, and insistently that they are the opposite sex. Then as your child approaches puberty, you should place your child on puberty-blocking drugs to prevent your child from going through puberty in the, quote, wrong body. This means that boys and girls will be trapped in immature bodies while the rest of their classmates are developing. So that leads to the third step, which is that now you have these teenage individuals who haven't matured. And so the third step is around age 14, 15, or 16 to administer the opposite sex's sex hormones, to give testosterone to teenage girls, to give estrogen to teenage boys, to try to mimic puberty of the opposite sex, to try to masculinize that girl's body, to try to feminize that boy's body. And then at age 18, the individual is now eligible for reassignment surgery. It doesn't actually reassign sex. Sex can't be reassigned. But what it can do is it can remove certain internal reproductive organs, external genitalia, and or secondary sex characteristics. And then through cosmetic surgery, try to recreate something that would resemble the opposite sex's sex organs or secondary sex characteristics. So that by the time you're 20 years old, you might have been on testosterone and had a double mastectomy before you're even mature enough to know what it is to be a woman.
That, I have to say, is horrifying. And I know that many people feel that they are doing good by doing these things, but these are children, and we have such a limited understanding even of how normal development goes that we feel that we're in a position to say, at 3 years old, let's start you on this, and there's a whole process now developed, and by the time you're 20, you won't be Bob anymore. You'll be somebody else.
Yeah, and many of the doctors that I spoke with, and you know, that I cite in the book, they express concerns about this because ordinarily somewhere between 80 to 95% of young people who do have a gender identity conflict will naturally grow out of it if development is not interfered with. And let me just say that again. Ordinarily, 80 to 95% of young people who do have a gender identity conflict would naturally grow out of it. But if you go along with this treatment protocol, you might be locking in the transgender identity.
Yeah. And that, so it's not to diminish the experience of the 10 to 20% who will have a persistent sense of themselves being in the wrong body. But without question, that's a lot of children who have, had they been left alone, then they'd have been fine. We'll be right back with more with Ryan T. Anderson. And your calls, I'm sorry I haven't gotten to them, on Catholic Answers Live after this.
Join us on air today on Catholic Answers Live.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Now there's a fast and easy way to get in touch with EWTN, the EWTN Everything Number. Call 1-800-447-EWTN to get the latest information on programming, special events, pilgrimages, and more. Our EWTN Family Viewer Services representatives are ready to help you with whatever your needs may be. The EWTN Everything Number, 1-800-447-EWTN. EWTN.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest this hour, Ryan T. Anderson, is the author of When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. I notice you have quite a few people who have kind of blurbed the book. You have some very impressive friends and colleagues. But among the many things that are said is that I think nobody wants to let go of a basic idea that we must not be uncharitable about this, that there is a great deal of human suffering that we're confronting here, and that smart aleck answers or, you know, just telling people to knock it off is not the way to go. We have to be more serious and more charitable than that.
Oh, that is not just exactly right, but it's profoundly right and profoundly important. This was not meant to be kind of, you know, one of those like political bestsellers where you slam your opponent and you try to turn the rhetoric to, you know, number 11 on the dial that only goes up to 10. This is really meant to equip people for how to understand what's going on and then how to respond with love in truth. Because the only way we can actually be really compassionate is if we know what's the truth about the human person, about human nature, about people who are suffering, and then if we can communicate it in a way that will resonate with them. So the book is really meant to turn down the temperature on these debates and to also really distinguish between an ideology that needs to be combated and people who need to be comforted. Right?
Yes.
It's the ideology that is doing so much harm in so many people's lives. But the people who are suffering from this, they're frequently the victims of the ideology. They're not the perpetrators. They're the victims because they were told by a school guidance counselor or by a physician or by a therapist that the solution to their problems was a testosterone, or the solution to their problems was a double mastectomy. And it doesn't always work out that way.
No, no, indeed. Lots of folks on the phone for you. I have monopolized you a bit. Let me go to Nathan in Wheeling, West Virginia, listening on 90.7 FM. Nathan, thank you so much for waiting. Your question for Ryan T. Anderson.
Hi. Hi. Thanks. Thanks for letting me on the air. So what I am wondering is, you know, like you were just saying, there's a great deal of suffering here, and I know, you know, I know three men who believe that they're women, and they all have taken feminine names, have, you know, started expecting people to use feminine pronouns. So if I go along with that, knowing that, you know, as the church teaches, they are really men, is that wrong? Is that hurting? Is that causing damage? Or is it rather an attitude of charity to, you know, at least not to cause offense by using the pronoun that they were assigned at birth and using their old names? I mean, I'm sincerely confused, because they'll get very upset if you call them by their old name, or use their old gender pronoun. So what do you all think?
That it's a great question, and it's a very difficult one to know how to handle in the situation, because you need to keep two, I would say there are two guiding principles that you need to keep in mind. On the one hand, you need to maintain long-term relationship with these three individuals who are in your life. That the only way you're going to be any good to these three people, whether they're three friends of yours or three family members of yours, is if you are in a long-term relationship with them. Because it's not going to be one conversation that you have that provides the solution, right? It's going to be years of friendship and of relationship so that they can trust you, so that they can come to you when they're looking for your perspective, that they know you care about them, that you're not rejecting them, you're not belittling them. And so on the one hand, the need to maintain that long-term relationship. On the other hand, there's the need not to make them think that you think they actually are the opposite sex, right? You have a duty here to bear witness to the truth. Because what you don't want is to give them the impression that you think it's a good idea for them to transition. You don't want to enable them in that way. You don't want to give them the sense that you think they actually are a woman trapped in a man's body. Now, how do you do both of those things simultaneously? It'll look different in every situation. I don't think there's any hard and fast rule that says you can never use a new name. And one of the reasons why is that many of us go by nicknames. So you have someone who is named John, but they go by Jack, or they were named Charles, and they go by Charlie. And none of us think it's a problem to address people how they prefer to be called. You know, some people go by their initials, RJ, instead of Richard John, something like that. And so I think you could say to someone, I'm going to, you know, refer to you by whatever it is you ask me to refer to you by, out of a sense of respect for you. But I want you to know that I don't think you actually are a woman. And I think we can disagree about that while still being friends, still being family. And then here, I think it's just like anything else. We all have friends and family members with whom we disagree, but we don't relitigate that disagreement every time we see them, right? So maybe we have a family member who's fallen away from the church. Maybe we have a family member who's living with a boyfriend or with a girlfriend. Maybe we have a family member who's not raising their kids the way that we think they should raise their kids. And ideally, what we would do in those situations is we would find the right time, the right place to express our concern. We would let them know that we're always there if they want to talk to us about that concern. But we wouldn't constantly bring it up every time we see them, right? So it's not like at every Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner, you're still not going to Mass, you know, something like that. Because then they eventually write us off, right? So we want to bear witness to the truth, encourage people in the truth, but also maintain long-term relationship. Does that make sense? Does that get at what you're asking in the question?
Yes, it does make sense, and I think that also, though, for some of the people I've mentioned, I don't even have that close of a relationship with them. So if I just, like recently I met one of them at the library, and I just had to sort of, I tried to carefully avoid using either name for the poor man, because I knew he would get really upset and possibly violent if I used his name as a man, but if I used his name as a woman, I feared I would be validating his delusion.
Right.
So I there's really not an opportunity for a long term. I only have intermittent contact with this man, but you know, I say hi, you know, I'll say hi to him, and he knows my name, and I know both of his names. So what do you do in that
situation? Like that, you just try to be polite, and be open to developing a long-term relationship. You may be the only person in this individual's life who at a certain phase in your relationship would be willing to say, I don't think you actually are a woman. But you can't tell someone that until they're ready to hear it, until you've developed the type of rapport where he would trust that you're saying it not to belittle him or to mock him, but because you actually care about him. And so I would say in that situation, you know, be open to developing a closer friendship with the individual so that you're at a place where you could one day discuss those issues with him.
Okay, Nathan?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you so much for that call. I don't think that there are too many people who will say, I have, three friends in my life who are transgender people. And I think that may be because most people are not as open as Nathan is. That's a very impressive thing to me. And I'm very glad that you called, Nathan. Thank you for that question. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. Dr. Ryan Anderson, When Harry Became Sally, responding to the transgender moment after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Tim Staples here. Since May is the month of Mary and Mother's Day, I'm offering a great opportunity for you to help yourself, your family, and your friends to get to know our Blessed Mother more deeply than ever before. And to help make that happen, we're offering my book, Behold Your Mother, a biblical and historical defense of the Marian doctrines for only $9.95. Folks, that's over 45% off the regular price. From her Immaculate Conception to the Annunciation, from her title as Mother of God to her perpetual virginity, from her assumption into heaven to her role as co-redemptrix, I'll give you all the facts and back them up with solid biblical evidence in a way that's easy to read, remember, and understand. Make this May the month you, your friends, and your family grow closer to the Mother of the Church, our Mother Mary. To get your copies of Behold Your Mother, call 1-888-291-8000 or log on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the Great Big Monday Show here at Catholic Answers Live. Ryan Anderson is our guest. When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment is his latest book. And where's that book from? What's the...
Encounter Books.
Encounter Books.
So okay. The same publisher who did the book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman at a Fence.
Yes.
They're willing to publish controversial but correct argument.
Fair enough. And this is a book for the general reader. It's not an academic tome. I would encourage people to read it because I think I wonder if you would agree with me. I think in many ways, on one side of the spectrum, people are not avoiding this at all. They're pushing it, and the other side is kind of politely averting their eyes. But that politely averting our eyes is actually we're failing a lot of our brothers and sisters on this planet.
Yeah, we have a duty to bear witness to the truth and to minister to those who are suffering. And to a certain extent, the only institution in American public life that will tell the truth on this issue will be the church. But the church understood is not just the priests and the bishops, but the laity, the people of God, that to a certain extent, it's our vocation to be defending human dignity and human rights and human flourishing when the rest of our culture has gotten it wrong. And it's totally understandable what you just described. So many people feel so beleaguered and so beat up after the past decade of the debate about the definition of marriage and the redefinition of marriage that they don't want to stick their heads up again, right? They don't want to speak up again and be attacked. Right. They don't want to be called deplorable and be placed in a basket of deplorables. But I think in this case, there's too much at stake to remain silent. And that in order to love your neighbor, we need to educate ourselves so that we can speak the truth in love. The way that we've been able to do on an issue like abortion, right? It didn't come easily at first. And there are all sorts of training ministries that teach people how to speak about abortion, how to respect the rights and the dignity of both the mother and the child. We need to be able to develop that capacity on the issue of gender identity and gender dysphoria.
Yeah, and it took us a little while to get up to speed, certainly, with the abortion controversy and debate and movement and all that. We're still getting up to speed, but we're very grateful for the book, When Harry Met Sally, to help everybody get up to speed. Let's take a call. Tammy in Columbus, Ohio, listening on 820 AM. You are on with Ryan Anderson. Your question, please.
Yes. What do you do if you are in the small percentage of people that there is actually something medically wrong with you, or maybe not medically wrong with you, but you were born with, let's say, both sex organs, and you were misidentified, and everybody told you you were crazy your entire life, and you went to have the sex change operation, and you found out as a woman that you actually had testicles that never descended, and you had the interior makings of being a male, and your whole life, your whole family told you were nuts.
Yeah, I mean, so there are instances. What you just described has been colloquially referred to as hermaphroditism or an intersex condition. The kind of technical terminology now is a disorder of sexual development. And so you can have people who have various disorders in the development of their sexual reproductive system, where it may mean that they have internal male organs, but externally they present as female, or they might have a combination of both. It's a fraction of a fraction of the population, but that's still thousands of people, people whose lives matter. And it's important that we get it right. These can happen, just, you know, for the general audience here. It can happen for both chromosomal or hormonal reasons, that, you know, during the developmental process, there could be something wrong with the chromosomal composition of the child. So just as we can see that a trisomy condition like Down syndrome, there could be a chromosomal disorder that would result in Down syndrome. There could be a chromosomal disorder with the sex chromosome that might result in a disorder of sexual development. There can also be hormonal disorders where your body develops testicles that produce testosterone, but your body can't respond to the testosterone because you lack the receptors for the testosterone. So normally what happens in these conditions, there's a team of physicians at the time of birth that try to accurately identify the child, not just based on the chromosomes or the hormones, but how the child will develop holistically. The sex of a human being is based upon how we're sexually organized with respect to sexual reproduction. And there are two ways of being organized. There's a male way and there's a female way. And just like anything else for human development, development can go awry. You can have disorders of cardiac development, we'll call it heart disease. You can have disorders of respiratory development, we'll call it lung disease. There can be disorders of sexual development. And what they try to do is they try to accurately identify what is the underlying kind of holistic totality sexual identity of the person. But if, as you say, that they got that wrong, there's nothing wrong with getting it right later in life. I would also say in general here that the vast majority of people who struggle with gender dysphoria did not have a disorder of sexual development. These are people who physically are fully developed with respect to their sexual capacities. And so it's not a physical problem, but it's something with their thoughts or their feelings, it's the thoughts and the feelings not lining up with physical reality. And so in those cases, you don't want to direct the therapy at the body.
Tammy, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for the question. I only leave it there because we want to get to as many people as we can before the top of the hour while we have Dr. Anderson with us. We go now to Keita in Manhattan, New York, watching on Facebook. Keita, thank you so much for joining us on Facebook. Your question, please.
Hi. So lovely to hear you all. I just kind of dropped in and saw you talking about this book, and it piqued my interest. I'm actually a trans woman myself who is a Christian. So I wanted to know more about your guys' book.
Okay.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for tuning in. The book doesn't come at it from a theological or religious perspective. I'm a Catholic, but for the book, I just look at the biology and the psychiatry and the philosophy on how we should understand what it is to be a man or a woman. And what that does and doesn't mean. One of the kind of conclusions of the book is that many of the current kind of underlying foundations of much of the transgender activism is actually based on sex stereotypes, in which if you enjoy certain things that are kind of stereotypically masculine or feminine, that could be the underlying indication that you're actually a man or a woman. And so it's in very interesting ways in which the transgender moment are kind of doubling down on sex stereotypes, that if you're a boy who plays with dolls or a girl who plays with trucks, that means you're the opposite sex. And that one of the ways that we can actually recover a healthier understanding of these things is to reject misguided sex stereotypes. So on the one hand, reject androgyny, which would say that men and women are the same, but on the other hand, to reject patriarchy or matriarchy or any type of ideology that would say men have to and then fill in the blank, or women ought to and then fill in the blank. And that these would be ways in which we could help people feel comfortable in their own bodies, being who they are without having to transform their bodies.
Is that what the kind of response you were looking for, Kita? Or I wasn't sure exactly.
Well,
it was a very general question.
I wanted to make a comment. Just, okay. You know, I'm assuming that you aren't a trans person yourself. The good doctor who wrote this book. I hear what you're saying, and I think I hear the idea of believing that people are mixing up somebody going against stereotypical gender roles as being as taking that as meaning that they should change their sex or gender, however you would describe that. I think, you know, having gone through this myself, and I know that part of what I was seeing in the chat room was discussing also age. I don't know if that, if you guys mentioned age at all, I missed that part. I was, when I began my transition, I was 13 years old, so I was fairly young. It wasn't, I had been in therapy since I was 8 years old at my church. I grew up in the Lutheran section of Christianity. And it wasn't so much a question about what I do, you know, because I did play with Barbies and all the things like that. And that was never a pushing, you know, there was never, you know, any like, oh, my child should be this because they play with Barbies or anything like that. That had nothing to do with it. And I think overall, what most therapists who do deal with trans people, that's not really how they are classifying this. It's more of, you know, men and women can do anything their heart desires. You know, we have women who can fix cars and who are the head of their families, like you said. And we have men who are stay-at-home dads and are taking care of the kids, while women are out there, you know, making the brunt of the money, winning the bread. And I think that's one of the misconceptions about trans people. And not all trans people are stereotypically feminine. I happen to be stereotypically feminine. You can hear my voice. I happen to have had gender reassignment surgery, you know, but I have girlfriends who are very masculine and they do masculine things. Those two things aren't necessarily dependent on each other. It's the same way around. I know trans men who do feminine things, very feminine things, but the way that they present in the world and who they feel as a person is what has been set even before, you know, Christianity existed. People were set in the ways of male and female, and that is, you know, and that was the way that they were treated, you know, throughout the day, throughout their lives. And there are people who just
don't conform, don't fit. Is that what you mean to those?
Not even that they don't fit, because for me, my personal self, I fit into the feminine side. I fit into being a woman. You know, I see my mother and my sister. I'm like,
Kita, I'm really, I don't want to be rude to you, but we're almost at the end of the show. Did you want to have a wrap up comment? Cause I'm very grateful that you called. Or did you want a specific response from Ryan Anderson?
I was just very interested in what the book was. I mean, as somebody who has been combated with Christianity by other Christians within my church, you know, outside of my church, I was just interested to see what this show had to say that came from a Christian, specifically Catholic, viewpoint.
Fair. Okay. Fair enough. I am sorry that we have to leave it there. Dr. Anderson, any closing words for us?
All I would want to say is just how wonderful it is that we could have that exchange, civil, yeah, thoughtful, respectful, and where it's obvious that, you know, all of us concerned here are concerned with what's going to be best for people. And I would just say that those are the types of conversations we need to continue having in the United States, that too often it turns into shouting matches with accusations of ill will on both sides.
What?
And that we need to have better exchanges of goodwill. And I think we just had a good one there.
With so, Kida,
so
yes.
A good note to end on.
Very good. Thank you. I'm surprised that you would categorize our country as combative. We all get along perfectly. Well, all right. Thank you so much. When Harry Became Sally is the book, responding to the transgender moment. Ryan Anderson is the author. We'll see you tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.